Welcome to the Mile 99 interview with your hosts, Jessica Harris,
Mike Turner,
and Greg Larkin.
Enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the trails.
See you out there.
See you there. And we're live. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mile 99 interview podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Larkin. Mile 99 interview, as you may know, is a place to hang out with like-minded folks in the trail community. We share our stories, our successes, failures, and all of our deepest secrets. It's also the place to learn about the latest in local race news, find out what's going on in our community. We record in front of a live Zoom audience, one take, no breaks, and unlike the trail, what is said here is on the record. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jessica Harris and Mike Turner, but Mike is serving a dual purpose tonight. He is also our guest. We will get to that. Plenty of time for all that. Hey, Jess, how are you doing tonight?
I am good. I am kind of end of the year hustle for all my kids to just get things done and Mother's Day, teacher appreciation, signing kids up for soccer, ending T-ball season. So it's a busy one for me. And I got to start getting some miles in for Waldo, but feeling good. And thankful that the school year is going to be ending soon. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited about tonight. It's my favorite guest we've ever had is going to be on the show tonight. So I'm super excited.
You know what? We'll get to you. But first, we got to talk about all our good stuff, which is our Patreon. We've had a lot of support on Patreon recently. All our after shows go straight to Patreon. So if you want to get a little bit more intimate with our guests, you can head over there for $2 a month. You'll get access to that. Tonight, we will have all the crew and Mike and myself and Greg for the after show. So that will be pretty fun. We also obviously accept Venmo, which is a one-time contribution. If you don't want that reoccurring monthly fee of $2, our Venmo is at the Mile 99 interview. If you guys want to throw up some money to keep the lights on around here, it's much appreciated. And we always give back. We are doing a giveaway tonight. So everything that you guys pour into us, we pour right back into you guys. So that's some of our news, our Mile 99 news. How's the community looking, Greg?
Well, just before I get to that, I guess it's sort of part of the community news too. I just want to give a shout out to anyone that knows about this race. I ventured down to the Quicksilver 100K last weekend. And I got to say, that is one cool race. Very grassroots. And special shout out to the RD, Lauren Lewis. This guy is top notch. He came through clutch for me at the very end of the week, helped me find some accommodations. Very hospitable person. Super nice to the runner. So I would say if anyone wants a real serious qualifier for next year that makes you earn it, go check that race out. I know they'd love to see you down there. If you like climbing, this is the race for you. If you like the heat, that's another one. So thanks again, Lauren. Have a great time down there. Seriously appreciate it. So in more local news around here, we spoke about this last time, but the Auburn Aid Station, all of our favorite store in the Auburn area, they have started up once again, the 100 miles to Auburn virtual race coming up this month of June. There's different distances, not just 100 miles. Run 100 miles, run 100K. I think there's another distance shorter. You get varying levels of swag, buckle, medal, et cetera. Sign that up, log your miles. It's a fun time. It's helpful. It's motivating. And you know, you're helping support the aid station, which we all love. So definitely check that out. Now on the 27th of May, they are going to have a special movie night. So show up at 6 o'clock. Movie at 6:30, great way to kick off the Western States training weekend. So definitely check that out. That sounds super fun. We have Western States trail maintenance opportunities available. Go over to WSER.org, the Western States Endurance Run website. They've got a whole trail stewardship area with trail work opportunities. They've got volunteer signups. There's going to be brush clearing in, I believe, Duncan Canyon this coming weekend. A couple days. And so you want to go check that out, help them out, preserve a trail that we all love. That's definitely going to be a beneficial thing for all of us. Got other races coming up. There's a Twilight Trail Adventure race. This is in August. It's in Auburn, and it's designed to kind of help people get familiar with running at night. So like 5K, 10K distances. you know, not too much, but just enough to kind of give you that flavor. If you're getting into ultra running and you want to experience what it's like at night, this would be a great way to start doing that and be with some people and not feel too, you know, worried about, you know, whatever's out there in the canyon. So that's a good thing to try. Inside Trail Racing, friends of ours, China Camp Trail Race on the 18th of June out in the Bay Area. Definitely check that out this coming weekend. Anyone that is an absolute vert hound and loves the high elevation, Bishop High Sierra Ultras, I've got to get out to that race next year for sure. This one, amazing views. Aid stations are great. Our friend of the show, Elka, is going to be out there captaining one of the aid stations. And the best part about this is that money raised from this race goes to a great cause, which is supporting unprivileged youth backcountry camps. So what a great way to kind of give back to the community. Get kids who don't have the opportunity to get outside, get in the backcountry, find out what they're made of, get them some confidence. I think that's a great thing that we can all support. So check that out. Broken Arrow's coming up at Tahoe. Spots still available. Literally my fingers hovering over the register for the BK. That's probably going to be decided in the next couple of days. I guess I have to do that race. Cool Moon. Friends of the show, Hassan and David, I mean, they're out there every weekend just leading these runs and they're just getting great turnout. Cool Moon, obviously organized and directed by our friend Martin. If you want to get some experience on there, definitely check them out.
And I talked to Martin earlier. He's leading the Thirsty Thursday run this Thursday. And Saturday at 7:30, they're covering the 13.5-mile north loop of Cool Moon. So head on over. It's always a great time.
Perfect. Excellent. Tahoe Rim Trail Endurance Run. That's coming up. They need volunteers. So check them out. You can get to their website. Their volunteer director is Katie Bell at trtvolunteer@gmail.com. If you have some time to help them out, classic race up in the Tahoe area. They're also looking for pacers for the 100-mile and 50-mile distance from Diamond Peak to the finish. They have a pacer form on trter.com, their website. So you can just go and put your name in if you're interested in meeting a new person, maybe helping them out if you're familiar with those trails. Another great way to just support the community and get some experience on those trails if that's a distance that you want to upgrade to at some point. Silver State 50-50 this weekend. I know a lot of people are going to be up there. I've seen a lot of Strava workouts, people training up there. I've run on that course, not the race, but I've run on it. And man, that is a tough one. So I'm sure that's going to be fun too.
And they always have crazy weather. So I wonder what it's going to bring. Is it going to be really hot thunderstorms? I will be waiting.
Yeah. And every year it's like different, right? Like anything goes. So absolutely check that out. So that's about it for the community news right now. We want to talk a little bit about a giveaway that we're doing tonight. I had a really good time down at Quiksilver with some products that we just got some samples of earlier this year. And I decided, you know what? I want to use these things. I'm a New Hampshire guy. We basically drink maple syrup by the gallon. That's just a thing. All right. So as soon as I hear about maple syrup gels, I'm in. So we've got the Endurance Tap maple syrup gels. We've got the Salt Stick Easy Chews. These things are great. I use these. I kept putting them in like every half an hour or so. You know, I use other stuff, fruit, whatever. But I think I had one of my best fuel races ever. And I hadn't raced that distance for 3 years. So I was super happy about that. So what we're doing right now is we're going to keep track of all the names of the people on the Zoom session. We're going to put your names in a hat. If you're watching this on Facebook Live right now, drop us a salt shaker emoji in a Facebook comment on the event here on the video. And we'll also add your name in there. We're going to do the drawing afterwards on the after show. We'll notify you and then we will send out some product samples. So if you're really interested in that, definitely check that out. Yeah, we're happy to work with these products. They've been working well for me. I hope they work well for you as well. All right, that's it. Back to you, Jess.
Thank you. And yeah, big congratulations, Greg, for sticking out 100K. Proud of you. And I know it probably wasn't the day that you wanted, but you finished it. And that says a lot.
The only goal was to get in under 16. I barely made it. I've done it faster, but I can't complain.
Speaking of your maple syrups, I need to get a Bobo sponsorship because Bobo supported my Coca Dona, right? Everyone knows that.
Hey, hey, you. We'll get to you, okay? All right. Well, where do I start tonight? Mike is our beloved co-host, accomplished trail and ultra runner, valued community member, and one of our favorite guys in the podcast. On May 2nd, 2022, he started Cocodona 250 at Kubler, is that right? Kubler Field in Prescott, Arizona, with his crew chief and daughter, Savannah Turner. For his 50th year of life, he decided to go big. He spent 108 hours climbing, jogging, running, sleeping, carrying an umbrella, snacking, and taping blisters from Prescott across Fane Ranch up Mingus Mountain through the historic towns of Jerome and Sedona, summiting Mount Eldon, and to the finish line in Flagstaff. So many of us religiously tracked him and that umbrella, sun umbrella. And now we get to hear the stories that have been untold. And I personally can't wait so much. Mike Turner, welcome to the show.
So happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me to our own show.
You know, well, we weren't sure, right? Like sometimes people don't want to talk after races. So once you finished and you called me the next day, I was like, hey, I know this podcast that wants to hear your story. So welcome.
Thank you. Last year, I did not want to talk about it. This year, I'm open to talk about it.
We are going to talk about it. First, I think what everyone, we need to see the buckle. Do you have it close?
I do. I have it close here.
Oh, look at that. Have you worn it yet?
I've been wearing it every day.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah, it's right here on my desk. I can look at and think about it.
Well, we will get to the umbrella, which is like the second most important question. But I think we're going to kind of bring it back a little bit. In one of our episodes with Beer on the Run podcast, Clint Welch and Jack Rosenberg, we had already done your how you got into running. So now we're going to kind of just, why on earth would you want to run 250 miles?
You know what? It was this podcast because it was never on my radar. I never thought about it, but we interviewed Bruce Wynn and Brian Paisley and Michael Lee. And we started, and after that, I just was inspired by what we're doing here. I just was inspired by it. And I signed up 2021 because of those guys hearing their stories and their struggles, and just felt like something painful that I wanted to do.
And I really like those interviews with them. You guys should definitely go back and listen to them if 200 miles are your thing. It's because they're both completely different on what they focused on. Bruce is like a very gear-oriented guy, like any gear questions. He's really, you know, focused on that. And Brian kind of has this like whole mind, body, spiritual connection to getting through to, and together you get a really awesome combination of things you might want to check out. So from 2016 to now, these are the big races you've ran. You run two 50Ks, two 50 milers, three 100Ks, six 100 milers, one 250 DNF, and then one 250 miler completion. So let's talk about that.
Well, you know, I don't run a lot of races because I believe in a really solid training plan that works for me. Races kind of throw me off. I've had injuries in the past where I've tried to throw in 100K and I've got injured. So I really just feel like a strong 6-month training plan works well. So I don't try to put in a lot of other races typically.
Do you mean 6 months for this distance or 6 months for any race?
Typically for 100 milers or more, I have a 6-month block that I focus on for that race.
I think that's really interesting because we hear 3 and 4 month a lot, but you give a little extra time that gives you some leeway for like life things that happen. I didn't know it was 6 months. I should know this about you, but I don't. So that's
The first month is a little bit flexible. You're mountain bike riding, getting in shape, doing exercises, kind of just getting your body. You know, you're kind of coming down off your last block. So you have a month of just this low, and that's like the first month. So really the next 5 or where it starts ramping up.
I see. So last year you didn't want to talk about Cocodona. Are you ready to talk about it now?
I am ready.
Okay. So what happened?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to my crew and captain. My lovely daughter, Savannah Turner, is here, and she was my crew chief. I picked her because she knows her dad. She's been to all my hundreds. She knows when I'm telling the truth, when I'm lying, when I'm suffering, and I'll listen to her because she's my daughter. So I picked her, and it was a wonderful choice. And then I have four wonderful pacers that I have here. Morgan and I paced at Black Canyon. We met at Thirsty Thursday. The only time she's ever been there, Thirsty Thursday. We met, we chatted about the bear. She invited me to Arizona. I said, heck yeah. And then she returned the favor, and it was so fun and to get to know her. And Kyle, I met in the North Fork Canyon. He was hiking with his buddies, and we started chatting, and he offered to come out. And then Mike and Kate came out. When I appreciate those guys. So those are my crew, and it just really worked out well. It was very smooth.
Awesome. So that's this year, but do you want to talk about last year?
Oh, yes, yes.
You're not getting out of it, man.
So
you DNF'd at mile 100.
Yeah, about 97, 96. It was at Payne Ranch. First of all, it was my own fault. My body wasn't ready. That's the bottom line. There was race issues, but the reality was I was not ready. I'd never done core workouts. We all say it's important. We all cross training, it's important. Everyone says it. We all know it, but I've never done it. So, you know, I ran. I did a lot of back-to-back 45s and 50 and a lot of long days, but I didn't really do excessive climbing, didn't do any core workouts. I figured, I've done a handful of hundreds, you know, how hard could it be? And then I found out, you know, it was a tough, I also didn't study the course. I didn't really know the course that well. Another error, looking at the climbs, the elevation gains. After you've done a number of hundreds, you kind of just get this kind of like overly confident idea that, I just jump into it. I'll just figure it out. That's a mistake. So I didn't spend the time doing my research.
So you think what I'm hearing is that sometimes with 100 miles and less, you can kind of wing it a little bit, but you're saying for these larger races, you really need to do the research.
Yeah. I think for any race that has a excessive climbing or inclement weather, you know, you really need to be thinking about that. And I just didn't. So I went into the race, and you and Greg and you were there, and I appreciate that. You guys wanted to come out for a week to come off with your families. And it was great to have you out there. We were all in this 100-mile mode, just going. It was also the inaugural year, so the cutoffs were a little bit tricky. And we were executed the race with a different mindset of like pushing too hard. That combined with my body, I got the ultra lean about the first evening around 9 p.m. I started noticing I was leaning to, I was starting to slip, felt like I was falling to the left, and I progressively got worse. By the next morning, I was literally just hunched over. And then we tried to recover with the electrolytes, and we thought, I didn't know really what caused it. No one knows what really caused it. I've done research since then, but at the time, people are like, electrolytes or whatever. And so, but I never could recover. And then I did a whole nother day, got to Fane Ranch, and everything was so cramped up from walking crooked for a day that I just crumpled over, and I couldn't move forward.
And that was your first DNF ever.
Yeah, first DNF. And Greg knows I have this mentality called zero doubt. And I don't ever let anything in my mind. There's zero doubt in my mind. If I don't finish, there's something's wrong. It's never, I'm fortunate that my mind doesn't have a lot of negative thought, I guess. I'm just fortunate. I know it's a challenge. It's not something I've cried at races. No, I'm in TRT. I've cried. It happens, but it takes a long time to get there. But this one is just, it was just rough.
So we know what physically happened to you. How did you recover from that mentally? Your first DNF, and you say you have no doubts. Was that a tough mental battle after you were home?
It's always tough. I think that because you think you, the goal is to get to the thought that I had no choice, but the reality was you know, I wasn't physically prepared for it, but could I have rested? Could I, you know, all those games, what could I have done something? At that point, when I stopped, you were there and Savannah picked us up, and I just was mentally, I was just done. And I never get to that point. It's very rare. I just was in pain for too long, 2 days of pain. It just was unbearable. And I just physically didn't want any more pain. So, but I got back and I didn't talk about it a lot. I didn't, cause it's kind of, you know, it's tough. We all get those. But then I started researching the lean, talking to people, watching videos, reaching out to Facebook people, talking to doctors, reading articles about electrolytes. And I finally met a gal, her name is Dr. Lisa Bliss. And she was the Western States Medical Director in the 2000 range. She's in Spokane. She has wrote some articles on electrolyte imbalance. So I called her. We started talking about, and I created this spreadsheet of what I had. So I knew what I had, and my numbers were pretty good, a little bit low, but generally I had the electrolytes in place. So she was talking about, it came down to my iliac and psoas core muscles. They were just not developed. And that's what holds your core up. And she's a strong believer that that's what causes the lean, is that you physically, it just like gives out and you have no support. So with that, I hired a trainer, Julie Young, works at the Kaiser at downtown at the Kaiser. She runs the sports facility.
Had you already signed up for Cocodona again before you got this trainer, or was this trainer because you had already signed up? What's the timeline on that?
I had the bear in 6 months. So I had not decided to do Cocodona again, but I had the bear already on the book. So I said, well, let's get a trainer. The bear is 22,500 feet. That Kate was there. It was a rough, I knew that would be a true test. So let's get a trainer, top dollar money, train, and then get to the bear and see how it goes. So she taught me how to exercise and how to plank and how to use the mini bands. And I did 5 to 6 days a week of mini band exercises and workouts at home. And I ran, and as True Blood knows, Turner Medium was always my classic catchphrase because I ran one speed. So Julia taught me how to change that speed. I started doing track workouts, track ladders, intervals, hill sprints, all these different things, heart rate training, really learned how to expand my range and how to control my heart rate. So I really, it's what I needed. I needed an education. I needed to do more than just run because I wasn't going to get there unless I did other things.
Did you, now looking back, or maybe currently when you were in that moment, did you know that the bear was going to be a checkpoint for you? Like, let's see how this goes before I sign up for Cocodona, or are you still not even thinking you were going to touch it again?
I don't think that I probably knew that I was going to do it again.
Okay.
But I don't recall when I signed up for it, but I got the DNF discount from the race company. I said, well, with that, you get a DNF discount, you know, it's like $400 off. Like I'm in. So I don't recall but I knew I was going to do Cocodona, but the bear is big. I'd never done a race with that much elevation. I mean, my DNF was like 19,000 feet, but the bear was 22. So I knew that would be a big challenge.
I will say he did discuss the Cocodona about June or July, he started talking about it again.
So Savannah, crew chief, for those who can't see us right now, and daughter of the star, Mike Turner, said that the bug was planted before the bear. So she just called you out. She knew. You knew. You knew.
I had to go back, right?
Yeah.
We always have to go back.
I don't know. I'm not that person. Like, if I DNF something, it wasn't in the cards for me. There's other races. I'm good. But
for me, I just know that, yeah, it's like, okay, what did I do wrong? What can I improve?
I'm really interested in the mental aspect of this. I think at one point you told me years ago, you had never gone to that dark place. And then you finally got there. And did it actually, was that actually a benefit now looking back on it? Do you feel like that that actually helped you in a way to know what your limit was?
Well, at TRT 2019, I did cry. I got injured at Miwok that year, and I ran TRT anyways, and I was really in bad shape physically. That's where I first had the first lean, was a mile 90 of TRT 2019. I had a lean for the first time. I thought it was a fluke. I didn't really know what it was, but I finished a race. I had 10 miles to go, and then I didn't know what it was, but that was a rough race. It was just, you know, when your body's broken, you can't just tough it out. Your mind is broken. Everything is broken. And so you're just like this conduit, this like emotion. It's like, I was like, what is going on? My face is leaking like crazy. It was ridiculous. So I don't know. I'm fortunate to not go to dark places as much, but I do get there eventually. I think it just taught me I need to be stronger. I need to have a stronger body and that'll have a stronger mind.
So after the Bear, did you run any races between the Bear and Kokodona 250?
I don't think so.
What did you do? What was training like?
We were going to do Euchre Bar, but we didn't. I don't really know why we didn't, but I set up a training plan. I have a standard spreadsheet that I use for training. And this year with Kokodona, one, I was going to solely train for that 10,000 foot climb. That was a big deal. I wanted to get through the first 10,000 feet. The race typically starts with a 10,000 foot climb over 50K. So that was what my target was, to get through that, do that every weekend over and over, and just feel good after that. So I did. I never got over like 60, 65 miles a week, but my elevation was 15 to 16,000 feet. And then probably about 10 weeks out of the race, we went to Mount Diablo with Kate and other folks, and Brett is on the show, and we got like this crazy 12,000 foot day. And then after that, I really realized I need to do at least 10,000 every Sunday. So I started doing 10K Sundays. I think I did six or eight of those in a row. I just needed to really, I needed to be strong. I needed to just get as much in as I could. I was not going to let anything, I was going to do everything I possibly could. If I had 1 ounce of energy, I was going to use it. I was not going to let anything on the table. I was going to do it all, no matter what, just because I was not going to fail.
You didn't. Love that for you. So the Bear is when? September. So when did you start training for this race that you finished?
Probably right after. I mean, it wasn't long after Euchre Bar, October probably. I think I started training, and so training through the winter. And because it's early race, you only have like, once Christmas is done, you have January, February, March, and half of April. So you don't have a lot. So I started probably in October.
Do you have, I know you don't have all your Strava stuff public, but do you have like a weekly, like how many miles you ran a week and how much vert you gained per week?
I do, yeah. I typically, like I said, I don't run a lot of miles. Mm-hmm. So I typically ramp up to about 60, and I'll probably do like 4 weeks of 60 miles. Some of those could be 65. It's only about 4 weeks of those that are in the 60s. Typically 55. I don't do a lot of turnover, but I do a lot of climbing. And in those weeks, I tried to get at least 10,000 right out of the gate. By November or December, I was getting 10,000 a week. And then it was 15,000 the last 4 months. I mean, just every week had to be 15,000 or more.
And were you still doing speed workouts and core stuff?
Yeah, doing speed workouts, doing once a week track. And then I would go from track to do elevation the same day. And then I was doing hill sprints, and I would do hill sprints, and then I would do elevation. And I was doing 5 to 6 workouts a week. They're like 45 minutes. And Tommy and I have talked about workouts. It's hard to balance workouts and running, and life is challenging. I was not going to let anything go. I was not going to let, if I didn't do something and then I didn't make it, that would not have been good. It would have been totally my fault. So I was not going to let anything go.
So you've talked about how you prepared for the actual course elevation wise. How did you prepare for the weather there?
Well, the weather could be one thing. Lucky this year, there was a fire, not lucky for Arizona. So the race usually starts in Black Canyon City, the finish line for Black Canyon 100K, with elevations around 2000. And that, and that elevation, the temperature's in the mid 80s. But since we started in Prescott, that elevation is 5000. So the elevation, the temperature was in the mid upper 70s. So one, I didn't have that big climb. And two, I was going to start at 5000 feet. So the weather was upper 70s. It may have gotten, but still the desert is dry, so you don't sweat. So if you're a runner that says, well, I'm sweating, I'll drink more, you can't use that in your mind because you don't sweat, it evaporates. So you have to just have a really strong pattern and a plan and force all the nutrients in because it's just a different environment. So it wasn't super hot, but the sun and the UVs are brutal. And so you have to really be thinking about keeping the sun off your body, even though it's not super hot.
So talking about keeping the sun off your body, what did you use?
Well,
that social media went wild. We're going to need model numbers. We're going to need.
I mean, Savannah bought this for me. It's a Gossamer Gear brand, which is, it's like an ultra, it's an ultra light backpacking. People use it for PCT and desert. And you know, it's, you can run with it, but not too fast. It's kind of, but it's super lightweight. And Savannah bought it for Christmas one year, and I've never used it. I've always wanted to. I believe that an ultra is a big energy equation, that everything is in and out of your system. So when the sun's on your body is using the energy to repair itself. So you have to think about everything that pulls energy, and you have to be able to find a way to reserve the energy. So this was something that I use to keep, you're walking in the desert for 8 hours, it just keeps the UVs off. So why not? Also, you could take off your hat and the air circulates through. It was actually really nice and it fit right in my backpack. So I just hooked it on there and it was perfect. I loved it.
It was the talk of the town here. And it's just so cute. We just love that. And then you also wore sun hoodies, which I think were really interesting. People here were like, why are these people wearing long sleeve shirts? So can you talk to us about that?
Well, last year I was wearing Columbia long sleeve hiking shirts for the race. That was what I was into. And then some reason last winter I bought, because I first wore it when I paced Morgan at Black Canyon, and I bought a sun hoodie, and I saw them somewhere and I thought that's pretty cool because it's lightweight. It has a UV protectant layer inside, and because I've tried head capes and various types of apparatus, but it kind of just, they feel very claustrophobic and they're flapping on you. I just don't like those. So I bought one last year and I wore it this spring, and I think I wore it to Diablo where people were like saying, why is Mike wearing a hoodie? And I just, but then the race company gave everybody one for the race. So we all got them from the race. And I had bought 4 or 5 this year because that was going to be what I used. And I used it every day. I put it on in the morning or the night when I got dressed. You could wear it when it's cold and you can wear it throughout the day. It was like, it was the perfect layer.
Did you have a shirt on underneath it? Was this like buildable layers you could do?
That was my base layer. So that shirt was my base layer. Then I have a couple, thanks to Greg Larkin, he turned me on to these really cool Gore brand vests that, I bought, I have two of those, and that's what I would put over like at night. And then if it got even colder, I would add on like a rain jacket over that. And one time I added on a puffy, but it wasn't really that cold at night. On the top of like, and Flagstaff, when you get on the rim, it starts to get cold. So it was cold there. That was cold, right, Morgan? Was that freaking freezing up there?
I think you can hear me. It was very windy on the top of that ridgeline where that photo was taken. The wind was nearly blowing him over without the umbrella.
So people who are listening to the podcast, can you tell me exactly where this was, Mike?
This was going up Mount Elden, which is you get into Flagstaff on the rim. It's like 7,000 feet. Mount Elden is another couple thousand feet above Flagstaff. It's just a really sharp ridge out there that you have to go up and then back down. So that's your last climb. When you get to the top, there's an aid station. You have 8 miles downhill to the finish. But this is, it's really rocky. It's like so, it's big steps, big blocky steps. And it's like, 2.5 miles and you go up a couple thousand feet. I can't think of anything like it here. You know, over at Donner Summit going on the PCT, that block, that rocky section, it's kind of like that. It's really steep.
I see.
We were very lucky to latch on to another Cocodona runner who was local to Flagstaff and told us right at the beginning that he ran that often in training. And so I didn't want to get us lost, and it had so many switchbacks that weren't always super clear. And so we just kind of hung on to him for dear life. And as soon as we got to the top, said sayonara, thanks for the the help up the hillside and the quick pace, but he was really helpful. And I think that Savannah and Mike were running into him off and on all week. Scott, I think was his name, but
Steve Ellis.
Yeah, he was a life savior.
Yeah, Steve Ellis, him and I paced Angela Ritchie at Javelina last year. He's a local, and I met him at Javelina. And then we got to know him, and Savannah helped out him and his family and helped tape his feet and help his family, forced him to sleep. I think that changed his race. That's another story. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about you, and then we're going to, I think, give the crew and pacers to start thinking. We're going to give you guys a little moment where you can share your favorite moment with Mike, or maybe see if this Cocodona experience had a missing glove and he had to use a sock like in the year previous. So you guys start thinking about your favorite story about Mike. But I did want to talk to you about food, because it's such an issue, not problem issue, but just something you really have to think about. And I know you've researched this a lot. So how did you calculate how much to bring, or did you just rely on aid stations?
Well, a number of years ago, I stopped using gel. It just is rough for me.
Mm-hmm.
I tried one that Morgan gave me and didn't go well. But so I've been using food. So I had a crew and they had food that we brought. I had a lot of snacks. I was using the Bobo. I'm also vegan this year. So I wanted to try to stick with that. I did have some chicken broth here and there, but I wasn't going to have any like grilled cheese or nachos or things, you know, but we brought food. So basically, it was very organized. Typically I get to an aid station and then I if it's a day, I'd sit down, they'd have all this stuff, fruit and smoothies, Odd Wallace smoothies were more popular. And I would just eat as much as I could. And we'd do all of our work and I would either lay down or this and that. So mostly just food, Odd Wallace drinks. I love those, the Bobo brand. They have different kinds of muffins, and I would pack my pockets with different kinds of Bobo brand muffins, and I would have it every hour. I knew every hour probably wasn't enough, but I could do every hour. And then when I got to aid stations with my crew, I really packed it in to try to make it up. But every hour on the hour, I had asked all my people to remind me. So I had two bottles of electrolytes on the front. Then I had a bladder in the back with salt stick liquid in it, but not at a light concentration. So I had a balance of electrolytes and sugar on me as well. So between Roptane, I didn't like the Gnarly brand they had, so I used my own Roptane.
Okay.
For electrolytes.
Awesome. And you said the aid stations are like stock though. Like they do like crazy good stuff.
There was good stuff at Whiskey Row. I had a vegan pizza with tomatoes and all kinds of stuff. That was amazing. I had some vegan chicken nuggets at Kelly Canyon. I had a Impossible Burger on Mount Elden. So they provided options for people.
And then we have some gear questions before we get to your crew and pacers. What shoes were you wearing and how often did you change them?
So during coronavirus, I was wearing Olympus for a long time. But the world ran out of my size during COVID. So I bought some speed goats and I had bought some topos last year and I did the bear in those. Yeah. You know, so come this year, I was having some Achilles problems. So I wanted a little higher lift. So I went back to a Brooks Cascadia 16.
Okay.
And I bought a pair of those. I bought a second pair of those. And I said, well, I'll bring those. I'll bring my speed goats and I'll start with the Cascadia 16s. What I noticed, because I had some heel issues because of all the climbing, my heels were sore and bruised. And so there was some, and I put some Dr. Scholl's in them as well. So I had some extra super cushion in my shoes.
Okay. Wow.
So I had two pair of the 16s. I swapped those out and then I tried the speed goats as well. The problem with the Cascadias is that they're an 8mm drop. Because I've been wearing a zero drop for years, the landing was weird. When you land, if your foot, your normal strike, the heel is going to be lower because it's a higher heel. So I didn't love the way they fit. Then they ended up ripping. Both pair ripped. So I got a warrantied pair, but they were okay. They weren't great. I'm going back to Speed Goats, and I got a new pair of Brooks Calderas that just came in. So I'm going to try some different shoes.
Did they rip during the race?
Yeah. So both pairs ripped on the bunion side.
Uh-huh.
Rips all four shoes ripped. So the problem is that there's so much sand there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but races, you can let sand in your shoe on a 50K, but on this long, you cannot let sand in your shoes. You cannot. Yeah. It's destructive. So with the rips, we tried taping them. And at that point, it was halfway through the race. So we had to just get it done. But you don't want any rips in your shoes. So maybe if I'd have brought duct tape or some really good Gorilla tape, maybe I should have had some better tape. I could have probably done some better taping on them.
And then that's a lot of shoes, Mike. I'm glad that you are like, let's just bring this just in case type of guy, because that's not like a predicament you want to have, like no shoes.
I didn't think about the ripping. That wasn't part of my plan, but I brought the other speed goats because sometimes when you're doing a long race, you want a different foot plant. So different model is nice because you can, it feels different. So I brought those out, but it turns out I didn't realize these Brooks were going to rip. And so they all ripped and I wore gaiters the whole time because this was a race where you have to do everything you've ever learned. Because anything on day one or two is going to just turn into crazy town if you let it go. So wearing gaiters, changing socks every 25, 30 miles, taping my feet, changing the tape every 24 hours. You had to do everything. You had to eat every hour. You had to drink a certain amount of volume every hour. You had to change everything. You had to do everything you ever learned. You have to do every single thing. It's a preventative race.
Yeah.
The goal is prevention.
I wish I could have prevented your shoes from ripping.
That would have been nice.
And then what was your watch situation? What'd you use? Did you charge on the go? What was that?
I have a Coros. This is the Vertix 1 that I got from my daughters, my Christmas last year. Super long battery life. I did test it out, and just in case, we did charge it every night. So Coros does charge during an activity, which is good to know, because Garmin does that. So I didn't know it did that, but I tested it out in advance. So we just plugged it in. I have a new a Jackery solar charger and
awesome.
a solar panels that we use for the ring. So these are chargeable of our supplies. So I get to the spot and Santa would plug everything in and charge up my phone. Every time I lay down, she charged my phone, charged my watch. And then we just kept going that way.
Find it.
Yeah.
I love that. And then real quick, because we are getting to the end already. Can you believe it? I know. I love it. Talk to us about sleep real quick. Because I know that your sleep strategy was a little bit different than others. And maybe you want to talk to everyone about that.
At first, it was difficult to, I knew what was right, but it was difficult to let all these people pass you. Mm-hmm. The first night I told Savannah, I'm not sleeping here. She was like, you're sleeping here. And I'm like, I'm not sleeping. And then she won and I went to sleep the first night. And I slept by an hour or so the first night. And then the second night I slept like 3 hours, and that was a game changer. So Tuesday and Wednesday, I got to camp around 8:30 at night, slept from like 9 to midnight. And that was every day I'd pass the same people, because I was moving solid and strong every day. My mind never, I never got delirious. I never lost track of my sense because I slept every night and my nutrition was up. So 3 hours a night, it was like, and I, 108 hours was my target, and we nailed it because of sleep.
Yeah. And I'm sure early on that's hard, like, cause you're still a little competitive and seeing all those people pass you, you're like, am I really at the back already? But, patience worked out. Yeah. So thanks for sharing some of those, the questions that have been flooding in from social media, as we were posting. I know, I think I texted Savannah when you were sleeping that one night, like, why is he not moving? It's been 3 hours. Like, we're all refreshing at home. So yeah, let's get into your crew chief and your pacers and people you brought along the way. First off, Kyle, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well.
What did you do for Mike at Cocodona?
Well, I'm hoping I helped out a lot. I helped out Savannah setting up aid stations. We worked relentlessly. You're traveling from spot to spot. I think we set up 14 different aid stations in 4 days. And they were pretty luxurious. They had pop-ups. He had his bed. He had all of his clothes laid out. Savannah had everything set, all of his food, exactly what he was going to need for the next section. So everything was all laid out when he came in. And then on Tuesday after mile 61, I do believe it was Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday after mile 61, I paced with him for 30 miles from Whiskey Row to Mingus Camp. And then the other pacer stepped in after that. But yeah, so we just, we set everything up and worked hard. And, you know, he got his 3 hours of sleep a night. And we got ours, we got our 5 hours of sleep pretty much most nights. And Savannah didn't sleep very much. I think she probably slept less than Mike, but it was overall good. When, before we left, we talked about Mike's mental, how he might go mental during this race. And he never lost his composure. We joked the whole time. He joked with all of his pacers. He held really strong. And we always talked about his pace because he did sleep, and there's people that passed him. And then the next day we'd pass them again. And it repeated that day after day after day. And then by the end, he kept his same pace all the way up to the finish when people didn't. They really slowed down towards the end. And so it was a pretty good strategy, and it seemed to work very well. He hit his target and he completed. So it was, pretty well done.
So his Turner medium paid off. I mean, we're full circle here. And then I heard you doubled your weekly mileage that week. That's a huge, you ended up pacing 65 miles?
69 and a half. Yeah. Almost 70 miles. So it was a good week for me.
Well, thank you for taking our buddy.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I think we're going to think of a funny story or something that you can share to embarrass Mike for the after show. Savannah, we'll head over to you. Crew chief extraordinaire, my very best friend. I publicly said it on the podcast, so that means she has to accept my friendship in real life. Savannah Turner, how you doing?
Good. I mean, it's true. You even gave me Taco Bell on the trip.
I did. I couldn't help but mother her a little bit. I said, I know you're not sleeping. Please. When we went to Cocodona, she's like, why do you order so much food from Taco Bell? And I said, listen, you don't ever just order one or two things from Taco Bell. You order like 5 to 10 because the price isn't that different. And you're supposed to indulge. So I hope you indulged a little bit. You probably didn't, but how was your experience this year versus last?
Very different. I will say, going into this one, it was very nerve-wracking because I knew it was, kind of do or die. So we took it a little bit more conservative. on our way down there, too, I made it clear that if I was going to be crew chief, he wasn't allowed to defy me. So any decision I made was the decision at the end of the day. So, yeah, I mean, he definitely didn't want to sleep that first day, but, you know, I think that set the tone for the rest of it, where he kind of gave me full control. And I feel like we worked together well as a team, trying to, you know, see what was ahead, see what he just passed, and prepare him the best we could.
And from being, from crewing him or seeing him finish so many 100-mile races, did that prepare you for Cocodona 250 the second time?
For sure. I mean, you know, hundreds, I've always struggled a little bit with keeping track of everything, and I knew that wasn't an option, because with 100, you know, if I lose track of one item, it's, you know, 20 more miles and then he's done. But with this, it's like, you know, if he doesn't have the right socks he needs, then the rest of the race could be compromised. And so kind of having all of those like past failures in mind and how to make them not problems now was definitely key. And then also, I mean, growing up with him, I kind of know what he needs and when he needs it. So I feel like that also played a big role.
Yeah, because I was there the first Cocodona, and there was always a sense of urgency. Being the first year, cutoffs were pretty tight, and, you know, facing everything that he faced that day, we did forget stuff, and we didn't let him, we couldn't, you know? So I'm glad that our runners' experiences carried over, and they made cutoffs kind of more appropriate for the people to sustain a certain pace for 5 days. So I really loved seeing all those cutoff times that were, and like 10,000 less feet of gain or something crazy like that. So, and thank you for Savannah, you had such a big job. And for me, for you fielding all the questions for people, I was able to update our social media based solely on what you were telling me, because we could all watch a map, but we all really wanted to follow Mike. We all really love Mike. So I really appreciate that you took the time to communicate with so many people about how he was doing on top of just managing him. That is a lot. And it can be, I'm sure it was really overwhelming. Hopefully you still love me, but I know everyone who watches and listens to the podcast really appreciated our updates. So thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
And let's go to the next pacer, Morgan. How you doing, my friend?
Good.
She reached out and said, hey, I want to do this thing. I want to let Mike know how the community is feeling about him. And that just exploded on social media. Everyone who posted or sent us videos, they did get to Mike. Through Morgan. So thank you so much. That was such a cool thing that you did for him and for us as the community to be connected to him. Thank you so much. And tell us where you paced and what you did for Mike.
My job started a little earlier than expected. I got a text message telling me that we did not have his preferred hydration at the aid stations. And I was like, oh my, that is a lot of a hydration that we're going to be needing to have. So I worked Monday and Tuesday, and then Tuesday night was running around the Fleet Feet stores locally trying to find the Roctane goo. And I got a couple barrels of those. And so I felt pretty good, hopped on an airplane first thing Wednesday morning. And then I picked him up at around 2:30 PM on Wednesday. Kyle drove down, got me from the airport, and I asked his name, kind of like I was getting into an unknown Uber driver's car, cause I'd never met him before. Hopped in Kyle's car with a stranger, and then rode up to Dead Horse Ranch, I think it was, and met Savannah, and she ran me through everything that had been going on and let me know what sections that I was going to probably be doing, and just kind of fit right in like clockwork. We did 14 miles from 2:30 until about 9 o'clock Wednesday night. And then we both got a 3-hour nap, and then we did probably the hardest section I did was the next day. It was from midnight Wednesday moving into Thursday until maybe like 10 a.m. Thursday morning. We had a creek crossing, which is difficult when you're 3 days into a race and trying to fight blisters and do everything exactly right. Mike was a trooper and said that we didn't need to retape his feet after the water crossing and just let Savannah do it, because I was halfway delirious after one night of 3 hours of sleep. So I didn't have to retape his feet. But yeah, we crossed a creek in the middle of the night and went up 2,000 feet immediately afterward up onto this mesa. But I had pretty good sections, I would say. It was pretty amazing.
Thank you for updating us on social media again, because that was really cool. It sounds like you didn't sleep and you flew on a plane with white powder. So that's questionable. Yes. So thank you.
Lots of white powder in my checked baggage, for sure.
And then I also saw this a little bit. You had troubles getting home. It, like, you had some flight issues. So on top
of this. They were self-inflicted. Okay. I left my backpack in Mike's 4Runner, which had my passport and my wallet and my driver's license. And I caught a ride with a friend who Mike and I ran with for a bit at Black Canyon, who lives locally, and drove me from the airport, or from Flag back to the airport, from like 2 to 4 in the morning after he finished. And I got to the airport at like 5 in the morning and had no identification at all. But the security woman was helpful, but very snarky.
So Savannah should be taking care of everyone's gear.
Yes.
What we're saying. Yes. Okay. And okay.
I realized I had a couple aid stations where we didn't have crew access. So one of them was that after the first night of 3 hours of sleep, we did a 16-mile section, which felt like it would never end. And then I had an aid station by myself with him. And then we did another 10-mile section. And I realized very quickly how important Savannah is, because we had overnight gear and I couldn't get it all back into his backpack properly. And we had to stop and rearrange it. And like, his jacket wouldn't fit. And I was trying to get fluids and food, and she makes everything flow very simply, but it is difficult. It was difficult by myself.
I bet. Well, thank you for showing up for our friend. And yeah. Think of a good story. People who want to join the after show, go over to our Patreon. Oh, great. So anyone who's listening, join our Patreon for $2. You can stay on the after show and listen. If not, it'll be on the post show on Patreon. We're going to get to Kate and Mike. How you doing, guys? Thanks for showing up for our buddy.
Hey, thank you very much.
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good. I tipped in for about 25 miles with him, about his mile 95 to like mile 120, I think, somewhere around there, from Mingus Mountain Camp, which was pretty cool. He had just gotten a shower, got a couple hours of sleep, and looked like a new person, clear, bright, hit that mile 99, like, oh, have I been running 100 miles? Yeah. And went through the night. Beautiful course. We ended in like Jerome, a mining town, and got to watch the sunrise there. They did vegan pancakes for him. And it was really cool to see him transition to from the cool overnight and everything that Savannah had ready for him, like just transition from the cold overnight to the hot sun, like it was nothing, like, you know, day in and day out, and, you know.
So timeline-wise, did you pace him at night?
I sense 12 o'clock at night, and then we got in around, I probably got back around 8 in the morning, yeah.
That's pretty good time. That is awesome time.
Turner medium.
And how was the rest of your journey? Did you pace any more? What else? Mike, what were you doing there?
Me?
Yes, what were you doing?
I showed up. First of all, I want to give a big shout out to Kyle and Morgan for stepping in. I don't think they were expecting to do as many miles as they did with him. Because originally, Mike had asked me to pace him, and I got an injury in March, and they had to like let him know, say, hey, you need to reconsider your game plan here, because I'm not going to be able to do what I thought I was being able to do. So big shout out to everyone else who helped. And plus, I showed up to the race pretty late. It was like 3:30 a.m. on Thursday when I got into town, because I had a surgeon appointment and all the stuff going on with me. Anyways, so thank you, everyone, for stepping up and doing that. And Savannah for like amazing work that you did. My section, I only did one section with Mike also. I did about a marathon distance. It was overnight.
What? Just a marathon. We just ran a marathon.
I may have been a little rude to Mike because I know him well enough where I felt I could be a little bit looser and a little bit more pissy with Mike than anybody else.
I got the real Mike Turner. Anyway,
Mike, he's on the trail.
Say he had a schedule in mind for it, and he didn't plan his sleep into it, like his pace chart, which is very interesting that he did as well as he did with his times, because I think that sleep helped him out so much to keep his pace so consistent. He really is a machine when it comes to that. I did miles 187 to 213. Almost every mile was sub 20. And that's moving at that distance. And this is overnight. Yeah. And opposite of Morgan, he had his whole pack that Savannah had put together for him with his nighttime cold clothes. And he got to take them out instead of me having to pack them up. So it was the opposite. So I didn't have to worry about that. Similar to what Morgan said, that we had an aid station with no crew. That was where he had his vegan chicken nuggets. It is definitely nice having the crew around, particularly on that last segment. I think he had that goo that he mentioned that Morgan gave him that didn't do him any favors. And then he became grumpy after that.
Well,
and kind of the trigger, I think. So the last couple of miles getting him to that aid station where he had scheduled, and we got there ahead of schedule. So he had 3 hours of sleep planned. And I think he was able to get almost four because we got there so ahead of time, because he just moves and it, like, consistently.
Yeah, the first, you know, day and a half he was at 70, like they give you your overall how many miles you're going to get per day, and it was at like 65 miles, and by the end he was still at 55 miles a day. That the variance of only 11 miles over 100, and, you know, like math wise, it's just like statistically very close. And as we are posting on social media, I'm like, okay, he's going to finish around 10:40 at night. I had to go, nope, it's 10:30. Nope, it's 10:20. Oh, he's actually really moving. Everyone log in right now. So we almost missed you because he was like, yeah, I'm just done here. We're going to wrap this up. So thank you for helping our buddy out, both of you. Appreciate you only running a marathon with him, even though you have an injury and crazy things going on. Appreciate you guys. The overwhelming theme here, and I think it always comes out in our podcast, is community. Mike is one of the best people I know. I admire him. He is just a good friend. Everyone is excited to see him when they see him on the trail. I know all of you have seen him often when he was preparing for this race. And look at the community that just surrounds people like that. Thank you guys for showing up for our friend. I know, buddy, we were crying at home. You missed it. I'm not going to cry again, but you missed it. So thank you, Kyle, Savannah, Kate, Mike, Trueblood, not Turner, and Morgan. I think we've gone over an hour, which we never do. But we just love our guy so much. I think Greg is going to play a little game with you.
Yeah, we know this game, right? A little rapid fire here. We got some questions for Mike. I think we already know the answer to this one, but we'll just do it anyway. Favorite piece of gear?
Oh, it's my Greg Larkin Gore brand vest.
What? No, I was thinking umbrella.
Well, the umbrella was good, but long-term favorite gear is the vest. I will never not have a vest. I may not have an umbrella, but I will never not have a vest.
I tell you, I packed mine and I knew it was going to be 90 down there this past weekend. I still brought it.
You never know.
You never know. Awesome. Well, yeah, you heard it here first, people. Go grab those vests. All right. So favorite race food, I guess, in the race, like while you're running, like what was the best thing that like kind of worked for you?
It was the wood-fired vegan pizza at Whiskey Row.
I can dig that. All right. Good. Next ultra you're in, request the wood-fired pizza, everyone. That is a must. Okay. So then favorite post-race meal after the fact.
Oh, being fed a beer without using my hands by my daughter.
Now that's a first. I have not heard that one yet. That is a good one. What would you say is your favorite experience from the entire trip, from the day you left your doorstep to the time you returned, race included, travel included, favorite experience?
DNFing last year and knowing all those names of those towns that I didn't see was very difficult. When I started to get past halfway and past the point where I DNF'd, and I started to see those little, the names of aid stations in Mingus Hill, and it was all really neat. But the best thing was coming over the hill and seeing the red rocks of Sedona for the first time in my life, which is so special. It's like, there they are. They're right there. I'd never seen those. It was so cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of magic out there. People go into those hills for sure.
Yeah.
Sounds like you found it. That's awesome. And then we have to do our final. We know kind of your situation, but the cats or dogs, like, we got to come down with, like, you know, a decision.
I've never had to decide this. I've always, it's never been me.
Mm-hmm. A lot riding on this one.
It's like 51-49, but I would say probably dogs.
All right. There we have it.
I'm surprised.
Sorry, monkey or old cat, but.
Savannah, come on, man.
Real. Ugh. All right. We got it on record. As we said, it's on. It's there it is. All right. Well, that wraps up our hour and a little with Mike. We appreciate you. We appreciate your crew, your pacers, everything. We see the true power of community here, what people will go through to bring a runner to that finish line, try to reach their goal. And then with that community, that runner turns around and helps them to their goal, or already has in this case in many, many ways. So that's really what we're about. That's what the community is about. So keep that in mind. And again, if you want to get into some pacing duties, some of these races we mentioned coming up, feel free to do that. That could lead to something amazing. We're going to stay on. We're going to have the after show with Mike and his crew and pacers. We're going to do the giveaway drawing there, and we will announce that on our Instagram stories. Thank you all for entering that posted little emojis and all the Zoom attendees. We will have our next episode coming up with one of our favorite Forest Hill runners. You might know him, Dave Hope, on June 1st. He is out there all the time, super popular guy, stand-up guy. Man, he supported me so much at the first Canyons race I did. It was amazing. He made a sign for me. Like, it was great. So we really want to talk to him. He's awesome. Please, if you're able to, right in the next 20 seconds, join our Patreon, stay on our after show with Mike. We'd love to have you. And then that'll give you the ability to do that going forward. And we just love having the support from you to help keep the lights on, providing some great content to you. You can also do one-time donations to us at Venmo, the Mile 99 interview, and all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, all of that. Find us on Apple Podcasts and on any podcast platform that you prefer to use, including Pandora. And that is going to wrap us up for tonight. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, all the crew members and everyone else. We will see you on the trails.
Bye.
Bye, guys.